Now I'd like to welcome Rhonda Rustin back. Our topic today is the residential, Indian residential schools, excuse me, the national settlement. And our speaker is 25 years Lethbridge lawyer Rhonda Rustin. And I would ask you to please come to the microphone with your questions. We'd like you to keep your questions as brief as possible, preamble as brief as possible, and to be direct with your questions. And to introduce yourselves, please, at the microphone.
That is just an excellent point. Did I just shut this off?
All right.
Howard? Howard, that is an excellent point. I had started out by saying that some of us had some missions when we began these lawsuits, and although you look at what we hoped to achieve in our legal documents and what we ultimately achieved, and there is a large degree of success, but the single greatest sadness, I think, is twofold. It's not only what has happened in the intervening 8 to 12 years, depending on when various people started their lawsuits, during which time so many people have died, but I think, too, that the government could have used this as an opportunity, and we tried to approach the government to use this as an opportunity to educate the non-native community about this very significant part of Canadian history with a view to building tolerance and building bridges between the two cultures, building understanding. And I think that wasn't done. I think what can happen now, Howard, will be, I think, first of all, I think each of us as a citizen of this country has the responsibility to educate ourselves about history that either continues to repeat itself or that continues to shape the events of the day. And I think secondly, a message of hope is in the funding in the settlement, which will allow the Aboriginal people to design for themselves a way to create opportunities for healing on an individual and a community basis through the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and that kind of thing. It was very important also when we started this work to make sure that everybody knew that
us few lawyers who had started the work did not consider ourselves to be the great white answer. Such arrogance would be shameful. And I don't believe that we have ever exhibited that. In fact, with each passing day, I become more and more humble. When I have been witness to the great unsinkable spirit and pride and honor that is in our Aboriginal communities, and that they will do well with that. They will, they'll heal themselves. It just would be nice for the rest of us to exhibit some understanding and compassion as they start that journey. And I think we, as a non-Aboriginal community, also have some work to do towards growing ourselves, because, you know, when we educate ourselves, and sorry to be lecturing, but as we educate ourselves and become more tolerant and understanding, we become better human beings for it too.
My name is Nancy Brown, and that's exactly what I want to talk about or ask you about. And where should I, am I better there? Not any better? Better there. Just follow it, okay. My name is Nancy Brown, and my question is, I would like to follow this. When I heard you speak, I knew very little of what you were talking about. I didn't have the background, or I don't have the background, but my question is, do you have a website? Is there somewhere I could go to and follow what's going to happen to our human and hopefully see the end of it in October or the beginning of the next year?
There are all kinds of websites available which you could use to keep yourself updated. If you just Google Indian residential schools, you'll have a wide array of information. The other thing that I will suggest to you, just hold on. Whenever I get a chance, I like to mention this book that was written, it's a Canadian book called A National Crime, The Canadian Government and the Residential School System. And the author is John S. Milloy, M-I-L-L-O-Y. Several years ago, I ordered my copy through Chapters. I don't know that they carry it, but you can order it. And it's excellent because it's factual. Okay, like if you really want to know what went on in the schools, I mean, here it is. It's all chronicled from the government's own documents. So this, you know, just like we can't deny the Holocaust, we can't deny this country's Holocaust either.
Gerald Obig, I'd like to know on this money part, is it all taxpayers' money, or are the churches being dinged for some of this? And if they are, how much are they paying? Thank you.
The churches are contributing. It was a key part of the government agreeing to the settlement that the churches themselves would contribute 30% of the funding that would go. So they would. So the church responsible would contribute 30% towards the settlement of their school. And there were some churches who stepped up willingly. I didn't have anything to do with the United Church because they simply did not operate schools here, but I know that they have always been open and wanting to deal with the issue. I know nothing about the Presbyterian Church. I can tell you that the fiercest court battles were fought with the Anglican lawyers and the very fiercest with the Catholic lawyers, or at least the lawyers representing the Catholic entities. I don't know that that necessarily reflects some of the powers that be within the churches. I think that there was always talk among some members of the in the hierarchy of the churches wanting to work on a more positive level, but I'll tell you, the fight was to the finish with particularly the Catholic entities. But they're now contributing.
Terry Shillington, thank you for your presentation and all your information. I appreciate the walks that you've made with Native people around this. I guess I was interested in your answer to the last question, and thinking that I appreciate your the push for some kind of act of reconciliation, and I'm not sure what form that would take, but you know, individual regions can do this sort of thing, and perhaps in this southern region, with First Nations leadership and involvement of some of the churches, we could do some kind of act of reconciliation or confession, or I'm not sure what it would look like, but I think it would be fun to have conversations about what that would look like. I don't know if you have a comment or what you've done. You've talked to a lot of people. Maybe you have some suggestions about what that might look like.
I think that your suggestion is a great one, and I would only say that what we could best do as we face our Aboriginal neighbors, friends, brothers, sisters, is to listen to them and to learn and to find out how we could be helpful. Again, when we started, it became apparent to us that it was so important to give people an opportunity to be heard. You know how good it feels when somebody actually looks you in the eye and listens to what you have to say. The burden already starts to lift off of your shoulder. And naively, I thought that we could use the lawsuits as a vehicle for some of that to happen too. I think that it can, through the funds that are going to be coming through to the Aboriginal Healing Foundation and to the communities. I think that the Aboriginal people themselves are going to have to watch where that money goes and how it's being used. And the grassroots, I think, are going to have to insist that that money be made to work for them. But again, I don't have the... I would never presume to know what would be best for anybody else. And so I hope, Mr. Shillington, that those dialogues could happen. I hope that you and others would create the opportunities for people to speak and be heard. As one who has lived it, you cannot hear these stories without becoming an altered human being.
Hi, my name is Nadia Campbell. We have a little bit of competition with sound back there, so I'm not sure whether I heard you regarding applications to get reimbursement. Now, I'm just wondering, why do they need to apply for this? Does not one person's trauma, isn't it the same as somebody else's? Who is to judge whether you need to apply for this? Why can't it be just a general, everybody who went to these schools to receive some kind of recompense for what they have gone through, rather than having to apply for it? This is my question.
It is essentially what you've said, is that it is this common experience payment in particular will be paid to every survivor of these schools. or their estate as long as they were alive as of May 31st, 2005. It's just that the government needs to know somehow even how to make contact with these people. So it will be a simple application form, but nonetheless, there's got to be something there for the government to respond to. Well, they do. And in fact, they'll be searching their own records for verification. When people apply, they'll go and say, oh yes, so-and-so was at the school from this time to that time, and then they'll use their records to verify, and then the compensation will be based on those records. But keep in mind that there's close to 80,000 people who are still alive to speak of their experiences in the school. So even I understand that there needs to be some sort of a process so that everything gets taken care of in proper order.
My name's Cheryl Bradley. Rhonda, I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about the proposed Truth and Reconciliation Commission or process. Like, will that be an opportunity for some healing, or what will its mandate be?
Cheryl, I'm sorry. I cannot tell you because I don't have anything to do with that. The money for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and the Commemorialization and Healing Funds will go to some Aboriginal organizations, the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, and I think the Assembly of First Nations will be very instrumental and influential in determining how those funds are going to be managed. And that's good, because then the people are deciding for themselves what will best work for them, and that's why the communities and the grassroots people, in my view, need to be involved in those decision-making processes, just to make sure that that money is going to work for the people as it is intended to.
Good afternoon. My name is Stan Rosen. We just seen, just in the newspaper a little while ago, that there was over 100,000 people who signed a petition to force some kind of change with human rights because of a dog that had been dragged. That had been dragged, behind a vehicle. Now, is there any way that we can use this tragic event to have people sign a petition that would ensure that all Albertans receive proper human rights protection? That's the way the laws are right now. What has happened in the past can still happen again.
It's always interesting, isn't it, to see what mobilizes people to action. And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that. You know, I'm a enormous nature lover, animals, and I care greatly for that dog. I care greatly for the whale who gets trapped in the ice and on whom people spend millions of dollars untrapping. And that's a lovely display of compassion. What I will never understand is why we can't take a small degree of that compassion and apply it to our fellow and sister human beings.
I was just wondering if, Gerald Wobig, is everybody that attended residential schools automatically get compensation? Because it seems to me from a little that I've read that there was horrendous abuse and lots of it, but I don't think it was 100%. does people who at once have found residential schools a good experience, are they compensated anyway? Thank you.
I don't believe there was a good experience in the residential schools, unless it was the moments when, you know, it felt good when you stopped getting hit. Everyone who attended will be compensated. The common experience payment is in recognition of the general loss of language and culture. And I think in order to understand the importance of that acknowledgement, one needs to expand the picture beyond the individual person who went to school, because not everyone, thankfully, was sexually abused. Not everyone, thankfully, was physically beaten or damaged in those kinds of ways. But everyone suffered the distance that was created from their families, from their culture, from their language. And compound that with the fact that there were several generations of children who had to go through these schools. And with each passing generation, there is a greater degree of pain and damage as each child is then let out of these schools. So the schools not only damaged the individual to greater or lesser extents, depending on the kind of abuse that they went through, but on a larger community level, when you have five or six generations of children being removed from their homes, you get a greater and greater separation from culture, from language, from family, from knowing how you're supposed to act when you're a mom or a dad or a sister or a brother. Greater distance from knowing how to express affection or be kind. Greater distance from normal sibling relationships, from knowing it's a nice thing to hug somebody you love. Those were also the things that were lost, and were lost on a family and a community basis, not just on an individual level. So that's what that community, or that common experience payment is supposed to represent, is an acknowledgement of that. I mean, and it's pitifully little money, quite frankly. But the most important part of it is this country's acknowledgement that it was wrong.